Hey, podcasters. It's Wednesday. Got a great podcast for you. Dr. Peter Boghossian was with us today. He's an amazingly brave man. He's up at Portland State University, and they are coming after him because he tried to out the scientific community and saying, your religion, your peer-reviewed system is broken. He and a couple of other colleagues, now he's under attack, had a fascinating conversation with him coming in just a few minutes. Also, who are the black Hebrew Israelites? Who are the people that were actually up there at the Lincoln Memorial talking to the Covington School kids? And when I want to say talking, I mean basically screaming epithets at them.
Yes, and this is a part of the kind of the research we've been working on this week. And again, thank you for making it possible. When you subscribe to blazetv.com/Beck, you can use the promo code Beck, by the way, to save some money. But when you do that, you're helping fund that research and make that research possible so we can take people off of other projects and do all sorts of things to make sure we dig to the bottom of stories just like this. And you've heard the research this week going through the entire timeline of what happened at Covington, the people who were behind it, the research behind the Native American activist who no one was looking into, the research into the group, the black Israelites who were insulting the kids. All that's come this week. And again, thank you for making it possible.
So here is today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let me tell you about Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock is something that I didn't even know you had to protect. You know, you think the bank has your title. No, it's actually kept in a vault, really one digital vault in the whole country has all of the titles. And when they're called for, they come out of the digital vault and they go out and then they are changed and then they come back in. Well, Home Title Lock is the company that is standing at that vault door.
They're the guards.
They're the only ones that have access at that point. So if they're watching your title, nobody can come in and steal it, because once it leaves the vault to be changed, they say, wait a minute, hang on. They call you. Did you sell your house? You changing the title? Nope. They hold that title and say, there's fraud going on. Nobody else does this. Get your $100 search for free to see if somebody's already taken advantage of your title at HomeTitleLock.com. I have it. Stu has it. We all do. We believe in it. HomeTitleLock.com. I felt this was an important story on the Covington Catholic School. Since the moment I saw it. But there are things about this that stand out. First, I think we're all disappointed at how fast everybody jumped on the bandwagon to bash this kid. But in a society of virtue signaling, you can kind of understand. But I was disappointed with how fast moderates and conservatives and the Catholic Church itself jumped immediately to attack this kid. That's a really bad sign. And I think it's a result of an entire generation of virtue signaling. It's not good. We collectively have no chance against future mobs if our own will turn on their own just to virtue signal. You have no chance. If no one will give you the benefit of the doubt without hearing the evidence, we have no chance. I also think what sets this apart, this is the first time, not really evident to the average person. This is the first time that the media has full on knowingly lied to perpetuate a story. And I don't mean knowingly, they knowing us. Usually there's some shadow of a doubt. Usually there's some reason. Usually there's something. We've all heard stories, and there's always something you're like, there's just this nagging feeling. Well, yeah, but maybe I'm not really sure. So you stand up and support what you think, but you could be pushed down because there's always some piece that seems to be missing. This is the first time I have seen one that the facts of the story were always there. the evidence that the story was wrong was out about as early as the story itself. And the media knew on this one. They knew. They saw this as an opportunity. Whether it happened like that or not didn't matter. But something's changing. This is the Kavanaugh story. We asked ourselves, are we going to learn from this? Nope. We said, what happens when this is your son or daughter? Remember? What happens when this? Well, this is someone's son. This is a minor. This isn't Kavanaugh, who did something 40 years ago that none of us could prove. See, with Kavanaugh, we still had to go with our gut and our common sense. And some people's gut went the other way. Some people said, no, you know what? I just believe her. And it kind of fell down on party lines, but not universally so. Anyone honest could come to a different conclusion. On this one, no. There's no way. So this is Kavanaugh on steroids.
Yeah, because you think if we happen to have 40 different viewpoints of the entire party that supposedly happened that Kavanaugh was at, it would have been easy to decipher what actually occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Here, we have 40 cameras, and they still can't seem to figure it out. It almost hints at some dishonesty. Almost. I know I'm reaching there.
Right,
but
sure.
It almost seems like they're just fitting this to their narrative, no matter the cost to this poor 16-year-old kid.
So here's the thing. The media knew on this one. They saw this as just an opportunity. Whether it happened like the way they said or not, it didn't matter. There's more disturbing stuff about that I'll get to in a second. This is also the first time the mob of millions has gone after a child. Now, let me say this. Do you remember just last week there was this picture of a naked trans man standing next to a trans child that has been performing in strip clubs? No one in the media had anything to say about that behavior or their parents. No one said anything. But a kid smiling. Apparently, we can read the mind of that kid. The kid smiling, even though all of the 2 hours of video evidence show that's not what was happening there. That was unacceptable to the media. That they had to preach. We've never gone after some kid. Especially, the mob never attacks some kid, especially just for smiling. If I give the left the grace of trying to frame their point of view in my mind, the most harsh charge I can come up with is that he smiled at someone. And then the rest of it, you just have to fill in the blanks. Even if you did smile at someone, is that enough to destroy him? To say you wanted to push him into a wood chipper? To offer free oral sex to anyone who will punch him in the face? To offer signed copies of all of my albums if somebody will just beat him up? Is it enough? That's smiling? Are you comfortable with your child smiling? Could be innocent. Might not be. For the millions of Americans to take a picture of your child, interpret it any way they wanted, true or not, and then target your child for death? This is an attempt to destroy an innocent person. This is an attempt to destroy an innocent child and intimidate anyone who won't go along with a mob. This isn't the first time, but it's recent than even after the evidence, the hard left, Hollywood and others, aren't budging. They will not accept the fact. This is new. In my opinion on this is new. Usually the hard left will not accept the fact, but they cannot convince half of the country When the evidence is clear and people have made a mistake, usually they say, oh, I'm sorry, made a mistake. That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is really disturbing, is the media and social media jumped on it, just like they did with the Obama picture. I'm sorry, of the jail pictures of the kids. Okay? They jumped on that. Then they immediately apologized. But what did they learn from that? Wait, don't apologize. We're wrong about this, but we're actually right about it because it's still going on. So here the media and social media and the left have said, he's a horrible monster. Oh, the evidence shows he's not a horrible monster. Well, I'm sure he's a horrible monster some way or another. Let's get him. And so now they're going to find any way they can to prove that they weren't wrong on Friday. They just weren't right about it in that instance. He is a horrible monster. This school is a horrible place. We know it. And how do we know it? He was wearing a hat. You know, Martin Luther King on last Monday was the anniversary of Martin Luther King saying, don't judge me by the color of my skin, but by the content of my character. Now, it's not even skin color. It's a hat color. Don't judge me by the color of my hat, but by the content of my character. On the same day, Martin Luther King Day, just a few steps away from where he made that dream, where he proclaimed that dream and spoke it into possibility of existence. They're not even judging on skin color. At best, this is the best example of widespread hate speech and active threats of harm delivered over Twitter and Facebook, where the companies refuse to police people, I've seen. You could say whatever you want about these kids. Facebook and Twitter, they don't care. How many people would they have to ban if they had to enforce this? I believe they realize that if they actually police the left would rise up and strike them back hard. They're not going to take on the left. Look at how much hate, how much vitriol has been preached. One journalist finally got fired. But look what he had to say to get fired, although he also still has a Twitter account. Here it is. I don't know what it says about me, but I've truly lost the ability to articulate the hysterical rage, nausea, and heartache this makes me feel. I just want these people to die. Simple as that. Every single one of them die, and their parents. Now, this guy lost his job, but the Twitter account remains. We saw something else with this story. It's like if you took the intersectionality foundation being built over the last decade and put it in a petri dish, this story is what it would grow. If you're a Women's March protester, you frame this kid as just another Kavanaugh, just another rapist in the making. I have seen these hundreds of times online. The 20-year challenge. Putting that kid side by side with Kavanaugh. If you were a Black Lives Matter supporter, you saw him as a KKK member. Here's Alyssa Milano. The red MAGA hat is the new white hood. Just saw somebody on CNN say, I'm just triggered by those hats. It's the new hood. Without white boys being able to empathize with other people, humanity will continue to destroy itself. If you're one of the idiots that think some secret patriarchal cabal is keeping people down, you see him just as part of the patriarchy. Here's another one. Racism is in boomer death throes. It will die out with this younger generation. Look at the crap-eating grins on all those young white slugs. Faces, just perverse pleasure at wielding a false dominion that they've been taught their whole life was their divine right. Just effing die. If you think millennials don't respect war vets, and by that I mean leftists who masquerade as if they care about such thing, you had an angle too. If you just hate Trump, the kid was the embodiment of what Trump has done to the country. So the kid doesn't get to just defend himself. He doesn't get to defend what he actually did. I mean, how do you defend smiling? He has to defend against being a rapist, a Klan member, a conservative, a Trump supporter, a patriarchy member, being a male, being white, whatever the hell they want to say.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to give you a show warning. Some of the stuff that you're going to hear is quite offensive. Listener discretion is advised. I'll tell you when we get into that. It'll be in about 5 minutes from now. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the Black Hebrew Israelites. The Black Hebrew Israelites are the story. If you are just watching the mainstream media, you have no idea why I'm talking about it. But if you've watched this show, if you've listened to anybody, or you've actually watched the video, the long form video of what happened in the mall on Washington, you know who the Black Israelites are. These are just vile, vile people that really were the cause of most of the problems on Friday. It's like having, what's his name? Reverend Phillips or Phillips. From the Westboro Baptist Church.
Phelps.
Phelps, yeah. That's right. It's like that. It's that bad. Nobody in the media is talking about them. I want to tell you who they are. The path from the founders of the Black Hebrew Israelite movement in the late 1800s to the group that is verbally abusing people, including the Covington Catholic High School students in Washington last Friday, is very complex. There are many different groups and subgroups and offshoots. It would take a week to untangle all of these. I'm going to try to boil them down. But no, I just got a letter from somebody who is a fan of this show and says, look, Glenn, I am part of Black Israelites. That's not our group. And I understand that. And I understand that religion is a very tangled thing. But I'm going to speak generally here and give you the roots of it. And then I'm going to speak specifically about this group that we saw. It all started in 1886 in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was started by a former railroad worker named Frank Cherry. And he established the Church of the Living God, the pillar and ground of truth for all nations. That was the official name of the church. He mixed together all the elements of Judaism and Christianity, and he believed that African Americans were descendants of the original tribes of Israel. He preached that these Israelite ancestors were chased out of Babylon into Central and Western Africa, where they were eventually sold into slavery by the Romans. He also preached that Adam and Eve and Jesus were black. Personally, I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to look for the character of Jesus, not the color of his skin. Cherry also preached that whites were inherently evil and hated by God. Cherry's church formed the template for a ton of offshoots. Throughout the 1900s, the offshoots developed into three main tracks. There were the Black Jews, who adopt Jewish rituals but also believe in Jesus as the Messiah. There are the Black Hebrews, who strictly practice traditional Judaism. And then there are the Black Israelites. These guys are nationalistic and the furthest from traditional Judaism and Christianity. This is the group that harassed the Covington students in D.C. Just last week. Now, the group calls itself House of Israel, and it evolved from the Black nationalist movement in the 1960s and 1970s, which branded Christianity as a foreign religion imposed by white slave masters on blacks. Now, this group is on the extreme edge and fringe of the Black Hebrew Israelite movement, but they see themselves as the radical reformers of Hebrew Israelites across the spectrum who have just all gone astray. Even the notorious Southern Poverty Law Center characterizes this group as a black supremacist group, placing it on the same level as the Nazis and the white supremacy groups. Why is the press, not worried about this group, but they are worried about white nationalists. The current high priest of this wing of the Black Hebrew Israelites has prophesied that a vengeful black Jesus is going to come back to earth and he's going to kill all the white people. That'll be interesting to see.
Interesting premise for a movie as well.
That's actually a movie I would like to see. That would be fun.
It may be a little sacrilegious.
A little bit.
A fascinating watch.
But with that cheery message in mind, small groups of Black Hebrew Israelite street preachers called camps station themselves at busy intersections in busy cities like Philadelphia, New York, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. And all they do is rail against the white devils, which they believe are descended from a race of beasts spawned early in the Bible. In fact, one of the twin brothers of Jacob, later called Israel, in the Old Testament. They also rail against promiscuous women, African Americans, because Native Africans sold Black Israelites into slavery. They also rail against Asians. They call for the death of Jews and the death of homosexuals. You're going to hear a sampling of pretty much all of this here that from a video taken Friday at the Lincoln Memorial. Now, former member of the Black Hebrew Israelites say that they use fear tactics to break down new recruits and brainwash them. Recruits are urged to join camps and verbally assault pedestrians. Now, it's easier to go through airport security than it is to visit one of the group's places of worship. White people cannot go. If you're a person of color, you have to explain to security why you're visiting and how you heard about the church. You have to swear that you're not a cop, you're not a spy, you're not a member of a rival Black Israelite group. You then have to swear before the security guards that you're clean, including not have had eaten pork or had sex for the previous 24 hours. They take your phone and photo ID during the service. Then they pat you down. Once you're inside the first door, you have to register your name, address, and phone number. Then you're handed a Bible. If you make it that far, a disciple then pours olive oil on your head as a final cleansing ritual. Now you can go to church. Good times. So there's their history. But what is it they believe and stand for? What do they preach on American street corners? Were the things caught on tape during the Covington controversy an aberration or the norm? You be the judge. But I want to warn you, what you're about to hear is highly offensive. The vast majority of their stuff cannot even be broadcast on public airwaves. But I get that. In 1 minute. Again, I want to warn you that what you're about to hear is highly offensive. But let me give you a montage of what these guys actually say on the street corners. How much they are like the Westboro Baptist Church. And they get no press. Listen.
They think it's a joke, man. It's not going to be a joke when we got a sword and it's going across your neck, man.
You're going to get tortured, too, man.
And by the way, all you so-called white ones, you're going to get brutally raped down here.
Right, right. Right. Let's
go. Ugly cave beast. Have your last days of enjoying America. The Mosai is about to put your ass in slavery. You're going to use us to do it.
That's right.
You little red punks. All right? That's according to the Bible. Huh? It's about to be 144,000 Nat Turner's risen up, all right?
That's right!
Just going to be killing so-called white people, babies included.
Okay. That's what they preach. That's who they are. That's what they were saying in front of the Lincoln Memorial. And God bless America, they have a right to say that. It's hard, but they've got a right to say that. And they have a right to believe that. They do not have a right to do that. It's some of the most racist and bigoted language you will ever hear. However, no one in the press seems to care. Now, this is not what the anti-fascists and the rest of the militant left has risen up in mass to fight against, is it? If that was a white man saying that, That would be a Nazi. And I know how the press treats Nazis. Where is the crowd of black-clad millennials standing against these guys? And I'm not encouraging them because I think those guys are radicals as well. But the reason why they're not there is because they agree with tear down the system. They agree with a lot of what is being said here. They'll show up to Berkeley. They'll protest Ben Shapiro. But not somebody saying these things? Okay, well, they're saying this all about white people, right? So it has to be okay. In today's culture of relativism, we can just let it slide, you know, as long as it's directed to white people. I'm sure they're perfectly fine with everyone else.
That's right. Dune Kai.
That was incorporated into those civil rights acts.
Yeah, death to you gooks.
Yeah,
that's right.
Death to gooks.
Now I hate Moabites.
Yeah, right. Man, these gooks, and you damn East Indians.
These gooks and these damn East Indians. They hate every race and creed. Now, this is the only footage that we could find that didn't have profanity. I can't include the audio of them slamming other African Americans. I can't include the video of them slamming Jews or Mexicans because it is so vile and laced with profanity that I cannot air it on public airwaves. We are editing some of those things down for today's 5 o'clock. And it will come with a very strong warning. But I believe these people need to be exposed and America needs to wake up. You're demonizing the Covington Catholic school kids who were standing up, not against four black men. They were standing up against these guys. In the climate of Me Too, you would think the anti-women stuff would be the final straw. But I'm sure they've never been hostile to women, because otherwise we'd see the Women's March people, led by Linda Sarsour, no doubt, holding an anti-black Israelite rally in Washington, D.C. So they must not be anti-women, right?
One of the top three fantasies of women is to get raped.
Who are you? Who do you think saying that it's... Oh my God, I've done research. You know, okay. I've taken
look
classes.
Up. Okay, look it up right now.
Those are your daughters?
My daughter, yeah.
We're going to take your daughters, yeah, right? They're going to be our concubines.
That's right.
Hey, somebody might pick you up too.
And the women laugh. Okay, I'm not going to play any more of this vile crap, but imagine just for a second that everything you heard was said by a group of white men on the steps of the Capitol wearing MAGA hats. They wouldn't last 5 seconds. They wouldn't last 10 seconds before Antifa had targeted them. And hundreds of people forced the police to arrest them. Hundreds of videos would begin to pop up on both social media and blasted all over CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times. Take your pick. It would be everywhere. Everywhere. They say they are for justice. The left is not for justice. They are for vengeance. And vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. They are for vengeance. Because they have no problem with these things being said by Louis Farrakhan, by Antifa, by Hollywood celebrities, even in their own ranks as journalists sometimes. I want to put that boy in a wood chipper. I just like to see all of them dead. That's not justice, that's rage. We must not engage in rage. It doesn't mean we can't be passionate. But we cannot be filled with rage and anger and want to just shut them up because that's what they want to do. How would you react hearing this on your local street corner? With anger, with fear, anxiety, maybe even rage? Nathan Phillips, the professional Native American activist, reacted by using the vile language that was directed at his own Native American people to make a statement, not at those speaking the words, but a bunch of kids who were white, who were wearing a hat that represented a wall that that particular Native American, who his particular tribe say, you know, he oftentimes does things that we don't agree with. He uses tactics that we don't agree with. He instead wanted to direct his rage to those kids who were caught in the middle. The Covington kids reacted with a pep rally. Who do you think were the bigger adults that day? Is there anyone anymore that has the courage to stand? And the courage to stand with peace? Did you see that teen? Did you see him stand up and appear on the Today Show? You want to talk about courage? I think a little bit of insanity. Show up on the Today Show. Watch the video. He was terrified. Why? Because just like your son, if you don't toe the line, you're not going to college. That kid's not going to college. He's not going to go to a college of his choice. He could be a straight A student. He could have perfect, perfect SAT scores. He could be the smartest kid in the world. He's not going to get in the college of his choice if it happens to be an Ivy League school or any of those run by any kind of liberals. Because look at what he did. He smirked. He smirked. He and his friends were standing against the black Israelites. And he smirked. Oh, my gosh. I'm wearing a Covington Catholic School shirt today. And I'm doing it for solidarity, not for the school or the archdiocese, who I think are cowards. Jesus was nailed to a cross for the truth. You're not willing to stand up for the truth because you're afraid of losing parishioners. You're afraid of losing funding. Do we need to remind you what Jesus did as he was dying, bleeding, mocked on the cross? Still kind of mentioning truth. But if you want to stand with the students of Covington, get your Covington Strong shirt now. Go to the front page of glenbeck.com or shop.theblaze.com. Covington Strong, you must stand with these kids. This is a turning point in our history. Which side are you going to choose? This really is black and white. It is black and white. Get your Covington Strong shirt now. glenbeck.com.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Last fall, it was revealed that a trio of researchers had perpetrated what they viewed as an important work that needed to be done. Work that exposed how crazy things had gotten in the peer-reviewed journals and in education, to where you couldn't question authority, but you could be published, even if you had crazy ideas, as long as you spoke the right language. Didn't really even have to make sense. You could take things from Hitler, and if you couch them in the right terms and you were making a point about feminism, you might pretty well get that thing published, peer-reviewed. Well, the guy who is really responsible for this, really the mastermind behind it, who started it, is Dr. Peter Boghossian. And Dr. Boghossian joins us now. There's more to this story. We covered it in the fall, but now the fallout has happened. He's in trouble with the university, an assistant professor of philosophy at Portland State University, Dr. Peter Boghossian. Doctor, hey, how are you?
Good to talk to you. Just a quick correction on that.
Yeah.
We are all equally a team on this project, and so there was no mastermind of this. We all participated equally.
Okay, but you're the only one so far that's in trouble.
That's correct. So the university system has authority over me. They exercise dominion over me, whereas mm-hmm. James Lindsay does not work in the academy, and Helen Pluckrose does not work in the academy.
Okay,
so I was clearly the most vulnerable of the three.
All right. Now, look, I'm sure we don't agree on 100 million things, but that doesn't bother me at all. I look for people who have intellectual integrity. And as long as you have intellectual integrity and you are married to the truth and, you know, hey, come what may, if I find that to be truth and I need to adopt that, I'm cool with that person. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. That's the attitude and the posture that we need to take in our universities now. And that's not what's happening.
But isn't how is it the university system, they don't see themselves becoming the Catholic Church and people like you as Galileo?
Well, that's a really, really pertinent question. And we have argued in Aereo magazine, for example, that this is a new religion. And so as you see the decline of the Abrahamic traditions, particularly Christianity, something has filled that void.
Nietzsche.
And I think that this makes sense in a lot of ways to view these folks as religious, really. They're kind of have an evangelism for social justice. They have political correctness, which is blasphemy. They have privilege, which is the analog to original sin. And so they're really operating in this quasi-religious context, although they don't consider themselves religious. So when you look at it through that lens, their behavior makes sense. And what's happening now is that universities are so they've become social centers of social justice advocacy
mm-hmm.
and not centers where people find the truth. So they've mm-hmm. placed an agenda ahead of the truth. And we tried to shine a light on that because we think it's hurting people.
So are you in the vast minority? Are you in the majority, but the only vocal ones? How prevalent is your philosophy? You know, especially because if I'm not mistaken, you're on the left.
Yeah, I consider myself a classical liberal.
Okay,
and
that's not the left.
What's very interesting is that 10, 15 years ago, I would be the guy that parents would come in to warn their kids about. Now I'm the guy, the whole institution has swung so far to the left that I'm the guy conservative and religious parents, and I wrote a manual for creating atheists. So you and I have some substantive metaphysical disagreements.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those can be worked out in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But parents come to me now and tell them that they want their kids to study with me. And it's just the most fascinating twist in the culture war. The fact that you and I are having this conversation now is another fascinating twist in the culture war. And I think the commonality there is we might disagree about interpretations of facts, but both you and I share just commonalities. Like, we both agree there's an external world. We both agree that your subjective experiences of the world don't trump any objective reality.
Mm-hmm.
We both agree that we don't want to punch anybody being punched, right? We mm-hmm. want to work out our lowest common denominator, but unfortunately it has to be said in this cultural environment. So we both value the truth, and we both value the fact that we can have conversations in which not only can we get to the truth, but it's okay if we disagree. I want to know what you think. And if I'm wrong about something, I don't want to be wrong. This is Sam Harris, as you dedicated your book to him. I don't want to be wrong 1 second more than I have to be.
Exactly right.
And as long as we share that attitude, it's fine. That's what Aristotle talked about, is the highest form of friendship between two virtuous people. if both people love the truth, that's ultimately the only thing that matters, if they have integrity.
So I mean, I'm a classic liberal as well. I am very religious, but I have many atheist friends. And I'm not trying to save them, and I'm not condemning them or whatever. Just live your life, man, and live your life to the best that you can. Is what is the system that you're living under making you a better human being or a worse human being? And I know people who are very religious who it makes them a much worse human being. And that's what we should all be striving for, is how can we respect each other's rights, basic human, constitutionally guarded human rights. Leave people alone.
That is a view I share, but that is not what's coming out of these bodies of literature in what we term grievance studies, basically anything that has studies at the end of it. One of the things that is coming out of this is an overt racism in the name of non-racism. Mm-hmm. It's an anti-male. Basically, it's identifying people on the basis of their immutable characteristics. For example, their skin color or some fat, right?
Martin Luther King's dream is absolutely dead right now.
That's right. That's correct. It's not that we judge people on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. It's the other way around. So but what's worse than that is that we see from these bodies of literature, and this is really what I want people to understand. People think, well, why does this affect me? Well, it affects you because this stuff is being taught in school to our kids, and they don't develop robust defenses of their ideas. They're not even many people who have alternative opinions, for example, conservatives or libertarians or Christians, they don't feel comfortable voicing those opinions in the classroom. So not only do other students not get the benefit of learning why people believe things, right? That's the philosopher Jürgen Habermas. We want to speak to people so that we understand where they're coming from. And when you understand where someone's coming from, especially in this incredibly polarized environment, it's much easier to look at them as people, to understand their points of view, and to have compassion toward them. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the literature coming out of these fields, there's no mercy, there's no compassion, there's a weird sense of redemption if you're quote-unquote woke, but these bodies of literature are causing contention, they're causing damage, they're hurting people. And that's why we decided to do this project, because someone needed to shine a spotlight on this.
Okay, let me just take a quick one minute break, and then we're going to come back. And I want to hear what's happening to you at the university and how people can get involved in changing this. So you did this experiment where you showed that you could pretty much get anything published. And instead of that being a shockwave through the peer-reviewed system, you instead start receiving incoming fire from the system saying,
right,
you betrayed us.
Right. So just a small correction, or maybe a large correction, not that we could get anything published,
right,
but we could get,
yes,
anything that was morally fashionable published.
Correct.
So if it espouses feminist dogma, it's far more likely to be published.
Sure. I'm not going to get anything published. If you published something that was religious or whatever and not in fashion, you couldn't get that published. You couldn't even get some of the other stuff published until you really zeroed in on exactly the right language. Correct?
Yeah, we figured out what the core tenets of their belief system are. And, you know, I can tell you this, and many listeners probably won't believe it, but it's the biology denialism is big, and hatred of men is big, and you know, in the dog park paper, the paper that received the most attention, we argued that we should train men like dogs. That was big. So there's just, if you know what to write about and you know what is morally resonates with them, then they'll just accept it. Boom, hook, line, and sinker. And that's unfortunate, again, because 7 papers in 7 years usually means tenure at most institutions. And then these folks in the grievance studies complex start teaching these papers to kids. They they then use that as homework, and they study and they test them on it, and then they come to think it's knowledge, right? So they don't need faith in this sense. They just, well, how do you know that? Not because I have faith. Well, here, it's in this. This is a piece of evidence. Boom, and they point to it.
So what did your university say?
Well, they brought me up on charges, but I think it's really important to give some background so that people have a context for this. First, there was an anonymous collective of Portland State University faculty who wrote really a slanderous open letter about me that you can still read it. It's online in the Portland State University Vanguard. They pictured me as an evil villain, and they put this, you know, nose on me, and they said, you know, snake oil, et cetera, et cetera. And the letter was really aimed at students to tell them that I, having me on the faculty was demeaning to their education. But I'll let people read that for themselves. So I think that's kind of the context that, excuse me, there are bullies. These people are fundamentally, they're bullies. And in this case, they're anonymous. So they're not just bullies, they're cowards. And they're operating behind the scenes. And so I'm sure that and other things that I don't have access to put tremendous pressure on the administrators to do something to me. So I don't necessarily blame them for an investigation. I do understand that they're under a lot of pressure.
But do you blame them for cowardice? I mean, truth is truth. It's like the Covington School right now. They're worried about losing their funding and everything else. They don't know which side to come out on. Mm-hmm. If you watched all of the videos, and I watched, right. I mean, my team watched all of it. It's a right. very different story. Now, these kids may be bad other times, but they weren't right. then. And right. I'm sorry, but if it's the truth, not to stand is to stand.
Right. So that's a commonality that we have. We both defer to what's true independent of our own personal feelings.
Correct.
So in this case, there were two things. There was I was found guilty of not going to the IRB. And the IRB is basically this human subjects board. And anytime you do experiments, quote unquote, experiments on human subjects, you need to get permission. And so we looked at this as, and this has caused considerable controversy and debate, we looked at investigating certain fields and certain journals and certain conclusions that the journals come to. They viewed human subjects as the journal editors. So I was found guilty of that, and currently that's escalated to the president and the provost of Portland State University. So they may or may not impose additional sanctions on me. We can talk about that. The second charge of data fabrication is ongoing. And I have not received anything. I don't know where that stands. I know that when I decided to go public with this, that the support that I have gotten has been unbelievable, truly, truly humbling and amazing from all over the spectrum.
Good.
Political spectrum, ideological spectrum, religious spectrum.
So happy
and
to hear
those,
that.
Frankly, are the most touching and satisfying to me. They all start, you know, we don't agree or we have many points of disagreement, but, you know, what you have done, I really appreciate, and we need alternative voices in the academy. So people really are fed up with this. But, Glenn, what's really interesting about this is that as the letters of support flood in and they're going to the man who spearheaded the investigation and some to my boss, the chair of the philosophy department, people are signing their names to these. That's what's amazing to me about this, that people are no longer afraid to be called a racist or a homophobe or a misogynist. So when they sign their names to this, they're doing so in a very public way. They're giving me a very public show of support, and people just aren't scared anymore. So that's been an amazing sea change in this whole thing.
Courage is contagious, and people, I truly believe, most people who are thoughtful want to do the right thing. They don't want to be a pariah. They don't want to stand alone. And it takes just a few leaders to stand up and say, guys, it's worth it, because here's what it means. You know, I'm very concerned about what our future is going to hold for my kids. I don't care about my future at this point. I care about the future of my kids, the future of the truth. If if we don't get a handle on this, I mean, what happened in Portland to the Weinsteins is obscene. And
evergreen, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And most people don't know what happened. And they were holding, I mean, it was like France. They were holding little mock trials in the library. People, you know, professors were not allowed to leave. It's frightening.
Exactly. And I really want to say, I think this is important. This may be very hard for people to conceptualize or very hard for people to understand. But once you put in the elements of a kind of evangelism to this, it makes sense. The Mike Nina just released a video. If you go to his YouTube channel, it's Mike Nina. One of the things that he shows in this video is how what happened at Evergreen to Brett and Heather perfectly parallels the evangelical or a radical religious fervor.
Yes.
And
yes.
Once you understand that, you understand why people act like that.
Yep.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.